This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
But in Bechukos HaTelech, we have a condition. If we'll go in the ways of Hashem and keep his mitzvahs and so on, then he'll give us rain in its time, and the land will give forth its produce, and so on. V'nosati sholoim ba'oretz, and I shall give peace in the land. Ushavtem ve'en macharid, you lie down, and there will be nobody to cause you to fear. V'hishbati chayor o min ha'oretz, and I shall remove all wicked animals from the land. V'cherev le'saver ba'artzachem, and the sword will not pass through your land. And on this there's a Ramban that analyzes the statement that I will remove all wicked, all wild animals from your midst. And we'll do the Ramban inside. Al-Das Rabbi Yehuda. According to the view of Rabbi Yehuda, there are two views in this matter as to what to the word the Hishbati means. I shall remove. What does that mean? According to the view of Rabbi Yehuda, She'omaru said ma'aviron min ha'ilom, that he will entirely remove them from the world, from that world, from Eretz Israel. That means, very simply, there will not be wild animals, there will not be vicious animals in Eretz Israel. It's as simple as that. That's what it means. Ki b'yoyis ha'sovo v'rabayis ha'tsoivo v'yoyis ho'arim m'layis odom. Since there will be satisfaction and lots of goodness, and the cities will be full of people, it will be a hustling, bustling economy. There'll be no place for animals. Animals tend to move away from places where there's a lot of human activity. So since there'll be human activity there, there'll be no animals. That is a consequence. The whole thing is a chain of effect. As a result of your keeping the Torah, the land will produce well, and as a result of producing well, there'll be a lot of human and social activity, and that human and social activity will have a natural consequence of removing the chayos ros. But that's Rabbi Shimon. But Rabbi Shimon holds of the view, Shomar mashbisom shelo yaziku. He will neutralize them, not destroy them. So that really is the question of what the hishbati means. Does it mean I will destroy all the wild animals, or I will neutralize the wild animals? Says Rabbi Shimon, what it means is, mashbisom shelo yaziku, I will neutralize their damaging effect. There'll still be lions and leopards and cheetahs and tigers and all sorts of things roaming around the place, but they won't do anything. That means I will destroy the evil of the animals from the land. Not evil animals, not wild animals. I will destroy the wildness of the animals from the land. And that's the way to understand the pasuk. Ki tihyeh Eretz Yisrael be'es kiyum hamitzvos kasher hoyo ha'olam mitchiloso kodem chetah shel Adam harishon. For when Eretz Yisrael will be in a state of fulfilling the mitzvahs, as the world was before the chetah of Adam harishon, so that's what we're trying to create in Eretz Yisrael. That is the purpose of Eretz Yisrael, at least in a limited area, to recreate the quality of life that existed before the chet of Adam HaRishon, before the sin of the first man. That's what Eretz Yisrael is really for. And that's why when one understands that and when we see that, it explains a little bit more clearly why we don't make a big thing of such occasions as tonight and tomorrow, which is Yom Yerushalayim. And certainly for the people who live in Yerushalayim, it's something very important, because they were physically threatened. And it was a very, very terrifying threat at that time, and a very real threat. And one mustn't forget that, and also to not to forget the tremendous bravery and the number of people that fought and gave their lives in order for us to get back Yerushalayim. But we don't make a big thing of it. There are many reasons why we don't make a big thing of it. One reason is because we don't make a big thing of any of those things. We don't know when Eretz Yisrael was captured the first time. That was the most important time, when Yeshua captured Eretz Yisrael. What day of the year was it? What month of the year was it? Does anybody know? Nobody knows. We know when we left Mitzrayim, that we know. We know when the Torah was given, that we know. But when was Eretz Yisrael conquered the first time? Nobody knows. When was Eretz Yisrael conquered the second time? Nobody knows. When was the Beis HaMikdash built the first time? In what month? Does anybody know? Nobody knows. When was the Beis HaMikdash rebuilt the second time? Nobody knows. We don't celebrate those days. So there's no reason to celebrate Yom Yerushalayim or Yom HaAtzmaut or any of these days. They have no religious significance. They are national days, but they have no religious significance. Those aren't the days that we keep. Those aren't the days that we celebrate. We know when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but we don't know when it was built. So to make such a big thing of Yom Yerushalayim and such a big thing of Yom HaAtzmaut, it almost puts Yom Kippur in the shade. It's just not, that's not Yiddishkeit. That's secular nationalism. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the Torah. And the other reason is, what are we celebrating? Look what Eretz Israel is meant to be. Why did these people give their lives? For what? So in their minds, maybe some of them were secular Jews and some of them were giving their lives because of a physical threat. But that's not how Hashem saw it. Why did Hashem bring about that victory? Why did Hashem give us back Yerushalayim? What must have been in Hashem's mind? Such miracles. That was Israel's height. Since the creation of the state of Israel, Israel's most glorious days were the Six-Day War. And since then it's been downhill all the way. There's been no recovery since then. It hasn't occupied the same status in the wider world. It hasn't been admired by the world the way that it was. It hasn't aroused the sympathy, never mind the admiration. Economically it hasn't been as stable in a sense. The real problems came after that, enormous problems. There were difficulties before then, but almost insoluble problems are subsequent to them. And politically there's been turmoil. And every war they've fought since then has been a catastrophe. We've come out with nothing. That was the last war that we fought that we came out with anything. Every other war that we fought since then, we've come out with less than we had before. The last war that we really won was the Six-Day War. So we can see that in Hashem's mind that Six-Day War was a turning point. That the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us something and we missed it. We abused it. What did he give us? The purpose of Eretz Israel is that it should be b'lo chet, that it should be b'kiyum ha-mitzvahs. It should be a place where the mitzvahs are kept the way the world was before the sin of Adam HaRishon. That's what it's meant to be. So what are we going to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut? What are we going to celebrate Yom Yerushalayim? It's like celebrating a gift that you were given and you destroyed it throughout. There's nothing to celebrate yet. When we get it right, when we've got it right, who have we got? Yom Yerushalayim. I think that Yom Yerushalayim, not only should we say Tachanun, but maybe we should even say Slichus. Because look at Yerushalayim. Look at Yerushalayim. Go to the Kosel and what do you see? Do you see tzaddikim all the time? You see people dressed the way they shouldn't be dressed, talking the way they shouldn't be talking, doing things they shouldn't be doing. Is that something to celebrate? And who's the mayor of Yerushalayim? Who leads, who controls Yerushalayim? A person who hates religious Jews in a way that many goyim don't even manage to develop such hatred. And that we must celebrate? Thank you, Ribbono Shel Olam, for giving us Yerushalayim under the leadership of a mayor like that. Is that something what we, the person who spent his career trying to destroy Yiddishkeit? And we've got to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for all that? When we've taken his gift and that's what we've done with it? There's nothing yet. The time will come in Birtz Hashem when we will have much to celebrate. The time will come when we'll have much to give gratitude for. And that gratitude will in retrospect start with Yom Yerushalayim, with the Six-Day War, and before then. But we've got to do something with that gift before we celebrate it. And that was the real purpose of Eretz Yisrael. That it should be Be'ez Kiyum HaMitzvahs Ka'asher Hoyo Ho'ilom Mitchilosoi Koidem Chetoi Shel Odom HaRishon. That it should be the way the world was before the chet of Adam HaRishon. Ein chayo v'remes meimis Adam. There should be no wild animals and no wild scorpions and snakes and no wild human beings killing people. Chumash Omer, as Chazal have said, ein oroid meimis, elo chet meimis. It's not the serpent that kills. It's sin that kills. Animals have the power to kill only because human beings have deteriorated. If people would be what they're meant to be, animals wouldn't be able to kill them. Then he goes on a little further. Ki lo hayo hateref b'chayos harois rak mipnei chetoi shel odom. The only reason that wild animals developed the nature of destruction, of aggression, was because of the sin of Odom. Because Adam then was given as game to the animals. He was given as potential food for the animals. And so the animals at the time of the sin were given that nature of destruction, of killing. But before the chet of Adam HaRishon, animals didn't kill. They had no desire to kill. All the animals were herbivorous. Even the lions and tigers and leopards and cheetahs were all herbivorous. Ki betir form ha'odom pa'amachas yusifu li yus roim yuser, because when they kill a man once, they become even more aggressive. And not just the individual animal, but that becomes the whole species. Once they've tasted blood, they become even more aggressive and even more negative. When the world was created, it says that Hashem gave the wild animals grass to eat. It says, and for all the animals of the earth, and for all the birds of the sky, and all the creepy things, any living thing, Hashem gave them all the green grass to eat. And the Torah told us, and so it was. That's the nature they developed, to eat vegetation. That was their essential nature that was given for them and for all at then and for all eternity. And then later on, animals learned how to kill for their food because of chet, because of the sin. And after the flood, when the Bnei Noach were allowed to slaughter animals, but animals you can slaughter, but not one another. That you can't slaughter. You're not allowed to slaughter human beings, but animals you are allowed to slaughter. Miyad chayo bechaverto nishoru amin hogom litroif. One animal was not prohibited from taking the life of its other, of its friend. The prohibition of murder was specifically given to human beings, and animals nishoru amin hogam litroif. Animals retained their its essential nature to be killers. Uvehemas eretz Yisrael al hashlemus tishpois ras min hogam beyamdu al hateva harishon ashehusom bohem beis yitzirosom. And the animals of Eretz Yisrael, when the land is in Shlemus, when the land is perfect, their evil spirit, their evil nature will be neutralized, and they will revert to their original instincts, where they were vegetarian, where they were herbivorous, as at the time that they were created. An interesting perception of the evolution of the animal kingdom, which Darwin hasn't yet discovered. And that is that the animals were not born, the wild animals, that the carnivorous animals were not always carnivorous. That was a consequence of Adam's chet, of Adam's sin, and they will one day go back to their previous state. First in Eretz Yisrael, it will first be in Eretz Yisrael itself that the animals will go back, when society in Eretz Yisrael has achieved that level of perfection, as being back again as they were before the sin of Adam Harishon. That's what the Ramban tells us. What has the carnivorous nature of the animals got to do with the chet of Adam Harishon? We discussed a few shiurim ago what exactly the chet of Adam Harishon was, what he did, how it changed the world, and we followed the view that the tree from which he ate was the vine, that he had a glass of wine for the first time, and that Hashem's intention was that wine should be the only treif thing, everything else was kosher. Of course, they didn't eat meat, there were no animals, as we've just learned. Men didn't eat meat and animals didn't eat meat, so the meat wasn't an issue, and apart from that, there was nothing treif except wine. Wine was the one thing that was the Eitz Hadas that he was instructed not to eat from, and that was the thing that he ate from, that he and Chava ate or drank from. And we explained that what that was, it was the, firstly what it did was it gave man for the first time the taste of something delicious but bad, and introduced that confusion into man's mind. Whereas until then, man had an instinctive craving for that which was good, and an instinctive repulsion for that which was bad. And after the chet, that instinct became confused. And man developed an instinct for that which was pleasant, and a repulsion for that which was unpleasant. Now if we compare that to the animal kingdom, we find that it's very interesting. Animals are driven only by their comfort and discomfort. An animal is not capable of choosing discomfort because it's in his long-term benefit. An animal is only capable of doing something because he is motivated by immediate gratification. That's the only way to motivate an animal. And if you want to demotivate him, he's got to feel immediate discomfort. If he knows that, if you condition him that every time he does something he's going to get a clap, he stops doing it. He doesn't stop doing it because he figures out, if my balabos is clapping me, it must be an immoral thing to do, so I'd better stop doing it. Who wants to be an immoral dog? That's not what he means. All he says is, I can't understand what's wrong with it. I love doing it, but the consequences are just not worth it. I get a clap every time, so it doesn't pay me to do it, so I'll stop doing it. So animals are simply politicians. Well, some would say it the other way around. But all they do is they're simply motivated by that which is comfortable and convenient for them, and they are repelled by that which is uncomfortable and not convenient for them. Human beings were meant to be different. Human beings were meant to have that same instinctive drive, but instead of an instinct for that which is pleasurable, they had an instinct for that which was good, and a repulsion for that which was bad. And that's why we say there was no Yetzirah at that time. Not that there was no Yetzirah, but it was so clear. There was no desire to do that which was wrong. There was an inherent instinct. And it's explained to understand what kind of free choice was there. It was the same kind of free choice as you would have now to stick your hand into a fire. You're free to stick your hand into a fire. Nobody's stopping you. There's no law against it. But you don't do it. Out of your own free choice you don't do it. Because it's uncomfortable. So before the chait, a person didn't do wrong because it was uncomfortable. He didn't like doing wrong. He had no pleasure in doing wrong. And that was the clarity that existed before. After Adam and Chava had their first glass of wine, things changed. And all of a sudden they were exposed to the possibility of intermingling the human and the animal into one being. And to find sometimes they want to do what's good, one part of them wants to do what's good, and one part of them wants to do what's pleasant. And when what's good and what's pleasant happens to coincide, then there's no problem at all with motivation. That's what we try and do always when we're motivating people. We're trying to persuade them that what's good for them is also pleasant. And that leads us onto this absurd belief that working for a living is a pleasant thing to do. And people actually start believing it. They get hypnotized into it. It's not, it's a curse. That was the curse that Adam HaRishon was given. You've got to sweat for your living. It's no pleasure. It's a curse. And as we've often mentioned, the women's movement, we also want the right to work. We also want part of this curse. Why should we only have our own curse? We want man's curse too. We also want our careers. They call it a career instead of calling it hard labor. If you go to jail, they don't call it a career. We're going to put you onto a career path of hard labor. They don't say that. They just call it hard labor. But when you're out of jail, which is also jail because it's a sentence, the Ribbono Shel Olam sentenced mankind to hard labor. So to try and make it easier for ourselves, we dramatize it and we romanticize it and we call it careers. We're going on to a career. And then the women, we've been so successful that women say, we want it as well. We also want hard labor. Not enough for us to have what we've got. We want hard labor too. We've managed to fool ourselves that way into believing that what's good and right is also pleasant. It isn't always. What's good and right is sometimes downright unpleasant. And the human being needs to have the capacity to make that choice. I'm willing to do something that in the short term is unpleasant, hard, difficult, because in the long term it's right. And I will find meaning in it, and I will find purpose in it, because in the long term it's right. Even though I know that in the short term it's uncomfortable, it's unpleasant. That's the conflict that we have had ever since Adam and Chava had their first glass of wine. But we spoke in that previous year about the breaking down of barriers, which is what the wine did, and we traced that through the history of the origins of mankind, how the breaking down of those barriers, the effect that the breaking down of those barriers had, and that every effort to break down barriers between different groups of people in fact created greater alienation. It didn't create greater intimacy. The more those barriers were broken, the greater was the alienation. But there's one barrier we didn't talk about that was broken down, and that was the most important barrier of all, and that was the barrier between man and animal. The distinction between man and animal was so clear at the origin, when man was created. Man had an instinct for good and he was repelled by evil. Animal had an instinct for the pleasant and he was repelled by the unpleasant. The difference between man and animal was as clear as day and night. The chait, the drinking of that glass of wine, confused the borders and integrated the animal into man. And that's what Chazal mean when they say we have these images, however we wish to take them, however literally we wish to take them, that there was actually a physical relationship between the Nachash and Chava. Difficult for us to understand. And that something of that animal was absorbed into the human being. That's what Chazal mean by that. That there was an integration, there was an interbreeding of man and animal at that moment. That there was no longer this clear barrier between the human and the animal world. The human and the animal now became merged in one new being, the post-chait Adam. Adam, after the sin, was now no longer pure human being. He was now a synthesis of human being and animal. And that was our difficulty and has been our difficulty ever since. that there was a breaking down of the barrier between the animal world and the human world. And we need to take our discussion of breaking down barriers one step further. We discussed what happens when you take down barriers. When you take down barriers, people withdraw. People remove themselves further apart. And that's why the removal of barriers doesn't create intimacy. The removal of barriers, in fact, adds distance between people. I was given another example of this breaking down barriers, where somebody asked me a shayla about an Erev, whether an Erev, I couldn't figure out how the shayla worked. And he says, there's a fence around the whole property. So I said, no, so what's the problem? He says, no, but lots of people live in the whole property. So I said, was it like a motel? No, it's not like a motel. What is it? No, it's private houses. Each one has their own house. But the whole community is walled in. And the houses, so you can carry within. No, none of the houses have got walls. That's open living again, making people close. It doesn't work like that. People don't get close when you've taken down barriers. People withdraw. And they withdraw, and they withdraw, and they withdraw further and further. And they become more closed, and they become more private, and they become more guarded, and they become more secretive. And they move into their corners. But what happens when they're cornered finally, and you come on, and further, and you carry on with them? So let's take in the office environment where we said, so you take down walls, you don't give people private offices to make communication better. So what do you find? People start talking in undertones, and they start coming into the office after hours to make their phone calls, and they lock their drawers, and they become very secretive. So you take away the keys for the drawers now, and you tap the telephones. What do people do eventually? They become aggressive. The last thing that's left to the human being to preserve his privacy is to fight for it. And he strikes out and he becomes aggressive. You can overburden a person, you can overwhelm a person to the point where he's got nowhere left to run. And when he's got nowhere left to run, he strikes out, and the animals are the same. An animal's natural tendency is to run from a human being. So we learned here in the Ramban, the animals weren't allowed to kill human beings. The Ramban says it also in Noach. Animals were allowed to kill each other, and human beings were allowed to kill animals, but animals aren't allowed to kill human beings, and they are chay of misa. They get the death sentence if they do kill human beings. Because it's not just because they're dangerous, because it's wrong. And they're not being punished because animals can't be punished. They don't have a moral consciousness. But nevertheless, the same as an ox that kills a human being is stoned, so any animal that kills a human being has to be killed, al pi halacha, says the Ramban. Animals were not allowed to kill human beings. So what happens to an animal? Yeah, a natural reaction for an animal, if he hears a human being coming, all the naturalists tell us, you don't have to really worry about snakes and leopards and lions. They'll run. They're more scared of you than you are of them. How often have you heard that? Yet people end up getting bitten occasionally. Why? When the snake feels cornered, or when the lion feels cornered, he doesn't run away. There's nowhere to run. And he doesn't lie down and wait for you to kill him. Then he gets in first. Then he goes for you. That's the nature. That's what aggressiveness is. That the removal of barriers, the disrespect for another being's privacy and for his boundaries, causes him to flee further away into himself until the point where he has nowhere to flee, and then he'll strike out with everything he's got in an effort to destroy you. That's what happens. And so when man broke down the barriers between man and animal, what did the animal kingdom have left to do? They had nowhere to hide. Man was now all over and all powerful, and man had become an animal himself. The only way the animal could retain his identity is to go for man in an attempt to destroy man. And that was the power of tarfus, that power of destruction, of wildkeit, of wildness, which the animal adopted after the chait of Adam HaRishon. Comes the question, how are we going to get it all right again? We can't undo there's no chiyuv for us to stop drinking wine. That's not going to help anymore. What are we going to do to try and revert to the pre-Chet Adam HaRishon level? What are we going to do to try and get back to that, which the Torah tells us is possible? We can get to a situation, initially in Eretz Israel, afterwards in the rest of the world, where not only does man recover his humanity, that does man recover his fineness, his nobility and his spirituality, but to the point where animals no longer feel threatened, where animals understand that division is so clear, that they don't feel the threat, and therefore they become less aggressive, and the animals lose their wildness, they lose their aggression. How do we get back to that? That's the subject of the Sedra. So it's an amazing thing. One looks at a Sedra like this, and one thinks it's one of these more dry Sedras, a technical Sedra with a whole lot of technical halachas, and really this Sedra is the continuation of Breishis. After we learn of the fall of Adam HaRishon and everything that it entailed, this Sedra tells us how to fix it. In b'chukosai telechu, ves mitzvosai tishmeru, In one sentence, the Torah tells us how to fix it. It's very easy. It's easy to understand, not so easy to do. What does that mean? Says Rashi, Yochel ze kiyum hamitzvos. I might think that im b'chukosai telechi, if you will walk by my statutes, I might think that that means that you should keep my mitzvos. Keshehu omer, but when the Torah says in the next phrase, the es mitzvosai tishmeru, you shall keep my mitzvos. Harei kiyum hamitzvos. That's talking about keeping the mitzvos. So what does im b'chukosai telechi mean? Then it should just start im mitzvosai tishmeru. If you will keep my mitzvos. And so on, then you'll have all this blessing. But the Torah doesn't say that there are two different things here. There's if you will walk in my statutes, number one, and number two, you will keep my mitzvahs. So walking in my statutes means something other than keeping the mitzvahs. Omani mekayim b'chukosai telechu, says Rashi, so what does in b'chukosai telechu mean? And this has now become exceptionally relevant to us. It's not just one of the many mitzvahs. This is the formula for the reinstatement of the pre-Chet Odom HaRishon humanity. It's the formula for the reinstatement of the difference between man and animal, of the boundaries between man and animal. That's what we're talking about. Shetiyu amelim b'Torah. This means that you should toil in Torah. And we'll discuss that in a few minutes. But this Rashi is amazingly absurd on the surface. Because what has Rashi just said? Let's just get it clear, those of you who don't have it in front of you. There are three statements in this first sentence of today's Sedra. Statement number one, if you will go by my statutes. Statement number two, the es mitzvosai tishmeru, you will keep, you will observe my mitzvahs. Statement number three, va'asisem esom, and you will do them. Go by my statutes, observe my mitzvahs, and do them. Those are the three statements. Says Rashi, go by my statutes can't mean observance, because observance is covered in statement number two. What is statement number two? And you shall keep my mitzvahs. Now look what Rashi says on statement number two. Ve'es mitzvosai tishmeru. What does that mean? And keep my mitzvahs. Hevu amelim b'Torah al menas lishmeru l'kayim. That also doesn't mean observance. It's a dimension of study. Your study has to have a practical focus. The purpose of your study has to be to improve yourselves and to come to keeping it, to putting the Torah into practice. That must be the purpose of the study. It mustn't be an academic exercise. So why does Rashi say that the first statement can't mean observance, because the second statement means observance? And when he comes to explain the second statement, he doesn't say it means observance at all. It's also a form of the study. The observance should be the third one. Why didn't Rashi then say cannot mean observance, because afterwards it says and you will do them? That's the observance, but Rashi doesn't mention that, which means also doesn't mean observance. So in this whole sentence, where's the observance? We need to understand Rashi in the following way. The first two phrases are instructions on how to study. The third phrase is the natural consequence of following that advice. In b'chukosai telechu means if you will toil in my Torah. That's what it means. If you will toil in my Torah. Ves mitzvosai tishmeru means the dimension in your study has to be, there has to be a practical focus, there has to be a practical dimension. You're toiling in order to make a difference to the way you live. Vasisem esom is the consequence. If you study in that way, vasisem esom, you'll end up doing it. You don't have to worry, everything else will follow. Nowhere is there an instruction that the way to repair humanity is through observance. The way to repair humanity is through integrated understanding. And the consequence of integrated understanding is observance. And then you've got a repair of the world. So why go through the whole thing? Why doesn't he just say observance? What's the purpose of going through it? If you will be amelim b'Torah, with the intention of doing, then you will do, and then you will fix the world. Because there are two approaches to observance. There are two routes to observance. And both can lead to meticulous observance. The one route is that you need to be told what to do. These are the halachas. This is what you must do. This is how you keep Shabbos. This is what you're allowed to do. This is what you're not allowed to do. This is kashrus. This is what you're allowed to eat. This is what you're not allowed to eat. This is when you must daven. This is how you must daven. We can go through the whole Torah and we can be given all the rules and all the laws of what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do, and we can then observe them for whatever reason. We observe them because we're afraid of punishment, we observe them because we love the Ribbono Shel Olam, we observe them because we believe they're right, we observe them because we're scared of our parents or our friends or whatever it is, makes no difference, we can then observe them. That's one route to observance. What we see in the opening sentence of this week's Seder is that that route will not change humanity. That route will not have an impact on society. That's not going to make the world a better place to live in. That will make the world a more religious place. That will make the world a more observant place. But animals aren't going to change their nature because they're more yidden walking around with their tzitzis out. Animals are not going to change their nature because they're more people keeping Shabbos. Animals are not going to change their nature because there are more people keeping kashrus. That's not going to happen. That's not how we're going to change society. There is a second route to observance, which is the important one, and that is where the observance is a natural consequence. It just comes automatically. Why? Because the human being has changed internally. And the result of that internal change is changed attitudes and changed behavior. But the change essentially is an internal change. Not a skills change. He hasn't been taught how to do something. Teaching how to do something doesn't change the person. And that's in B'chokosai Teilechu. If you will be Amelim Batoiro, if you will apply your mind and your intellect with tremendous dedication to a deep understanding of the Torah, to analyzing it, figuring it out, not just the technicalities of the Torah, not just the reading and translating of a piece of Gemara and a piece of Rashi and a piece of Tosfos or some Chumash and Rashi, not just that. But applying your intellect to a deep understanding, this mitzvah yisaitishmeru, and you're doing it with a desire to have that affect the way you act, amenas lishmer lekayim, because you want to give expression to the beauty of those concepts that you're learning. That's what you're doing. It's not you standing distantly and looking at some admirable intellectual system. But you're becoming involved in that intellectual system because you want to make it part of you and express it in the way you live. Then the Vasisimism comes naturally, then you automatically become a better person. And what kind of a better person? You know, between after every davening here in the Beis HaMedrash after Shachris and between Mincha and Ma'ariv, we try and learn a few lines of the Rabbeinu Yonah and Sha'arei Tshuva. 2-3 minutes, 5 minutes sometimes. And it's interesting, of all the Shiurim in the Beis HaMedrash, I've been told by a number of people that the one that's caused the most change in themselves has been that Shiur. The 5 minute shiur, which is very interesting, that it's not the length of the shiur and it's not the drama of the shiur. It's firstly the consistency, the fact that it's so regular, little drop by drop, every day one learns something more and something extra. And the fact that learning is taking place should be enough reason for the Beis HaMedrash to have to move into a shul of the size of Olmeron Street Shul, and there should be people standing in the corridors and listening outside with loudspeakers, because of all the shiurim that change people, this is one that changes people. But that doesn't really happen because people don't really want to change. People want to be entertained. They don't really want to change. They want to start acting a little different. They want to start doing things a little bit different, but not really to want to change. And one of the things we had recently in the Rabbeinu Yonah, and I pointed out over and over again, how we place a lot of emphasis in a lot of important areas in the Torah. And all the areas that are covered by Orach Chaim, Shabbos, Davening, Yom Tov, very important. And we place a lot of emphasis on that. And the Yoredeya areas, part of Yoredeya anyway. The kashrus that we have to keep and so on. We place a lot of emphasis on that. And we go to a great deal of extreme to try and do it as perfectly as we can. And we're prepared to offend one another. Just that chas v'sholom, we shouldn't land up eating from that shchita instead of from that shchita, because this one's a little bit better than that one. So I don't mind offending you. I don't mind making an enemy of you. I don't mind making you feel miserable. As long as chas v'sholom, I shouldn't eat from the one that's not quite up to my standard, because I'm very religious, you see. And I only eat from Rabbi so-and-so shchita. You need to understand, I'm not doing it to hurt you or to in any way insult you. I'm just doing it because I'm on a very high standard. And you're not on my standard, and I can't blame you for that, but on the other hand, you can't expect me to eat from your meat, because I'm on such a special standard. So we are on very great standards. But what we've found as we've gone through Rabbeinu Yonah, that there are entire areas of halacha, entire areas of Jewish law, not Jewish custom, Jewish law, which are deoraisas, which are laws of the Torah, as severe as any of the other laws we're talking about. Not only that we're not careful about it, but we don't even know about. These same people, us, we, who won't eat the meat from Rabbi so-and-so Shchita because we are very religious, don't even know of the existence of an entire area of halacha, nor do we bother to come to hear about it when it's being learned. We're not even there. Doesn't bother us. A halacha that it's a Torah prohibition to ask somebody to do a favor for you if that person can't refuse you. That's an issur d'oraisa. One isn't allowed to do that. Example. And countless other examples of how we're meant to relate to one another. How does one keep those halachas? There's only one way that you land up keeping those halachas, and that's if there's an internal change taking place. By starting to keep kashrus and starting to keep Shabbos and shaking your lulav a little harder and wearing your tzitzit out a little further, as wonderful as all that is, that doesn't make you treat people better. That doesn't bring about change. Change comes when change is internal. And that's what these psukim mean. It's not observant, says Rashi, Yochel Zekiyum HaMitzvahs. That doesn't just go on in B'chukosai Teleichu, that goes on the whole Pasuk. Do you think this Pasuk, which is the first time the Torah is telling us in one formula how to reverse the entire effect of the Chet of Adam HaRishon, do you think that this formula is the fulfillment of the mitzvahs? No, it's not. The fulfillment of the mitzvahs is the consequence of this formula. If you follow the formula, then there will automatically be true fulfillment of the mitzvahs, of all the mitzvahs, not just selected ones. Rabbi Tesla said to me this evening, he's got such a lovely sense of humor, apart from being so wise. He says, you know, if Lulav and Esrog, if we had to fulfill the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog, each one in their own cellars, without anybody else watching, do you think we would choose such beautiful Lulavs and Esrogs and spend so much money on them? The first potato that came to your hand you would use as an Esrog. That's what Rashi means here. Do you think it's kiyum mitzvahs? Just do the mitzvahs, go through the process of doing the mitzvahs. That's not what it is. That comes later, are kiyum mitzvahs. So, mani mekayim b'chukos ha'telechu, shetiyu amelim b'torah. When you're applying your intellect to Torah, that's when internal change starts coming about. But that means applying your intellect. And here, just a word about that. What we're talking about is the difference between skills training and true training. And the whole world today, the whole secular world, is dominated by sophisticated skills training. And I've only now become, through the work of the Institute of Business Ethics, to the amount of money that companies are spending in this country and elsewhere on skills training. And what is skills training? And they wonder why, in fact, skills training doesn't really have a long-term effect on productivity. Because you can train a monkey in skills too. You don't really change a person by teaching him how to do a job better. It's true, it's important to know how to do a job better, but you know, if a person really believes in the job he's doing, he'll figure out himself how to do it better. He'll figure it out how to do it better than any expert will ever tell him. You get a child and put his favorite sweets up way out of his reach and see the creative resources in that child to get to those sweets. He'll work out the most efficient way of doing it with such creative genius that you would never have figured it was possible. When a person is motivated because he believes in what he's doing, he finds the skills. So the impact, the emphasis shouldn't be on skills training. The emphasis should be on real change, on changing the human being. And even when it comes to Amelim Batera doesn't mean to sit like a parrot and learn Torah like you learn Latin declensions. That's not what Amelim Batera means. Amelim Batera is not measured by how many hours you spent learning. That's also not the way it's mentioned. What is the phrase that is used here? In Bechukosai Teilechu. If you walk with my statutes, you go with my statutes. What does that mean? You can't turn off. That's what it means. While you're working, while you're walking, you're trying to figure out a Tosfos. While you're sitting, waiting for the bus, or you're driving, you're trying to understand the difficult Rambam. That's what in Bechukosai Teilechu means. That's what changes a person. Not just that you spent an hour learning, or 2 hours learning, or 5 hours learning. Because if you spend 5 hours learning, when that learning is over, it's finished. And you go out and you become a wild animal in the street again. There's no change. If one's in the middle of a Rambam, when one's in the street as well, then one's not in the street, one's in the base of Medrash, even when one's outside. And that's the level we've got to try and battle to achieve. That's the way we protect ourselves. That's the way we ensure Shmiras HaMitzvahs. That the way we treat people will be as Rabbeinu Yonah says, that it will be with sensitivity, with understanding, that we will function like spiritual people. If we're functioning as spiritual people at that time, it's B'chukosai Teleichu, as you walk, you're aware of it. And that concept has been understood by the religious world, not only the Jewish religious world, but particularly the Jewish religious world, that we need to take our Torah with us into the streets. And now there are two ways of doing it. The one way is, and I'm not belittling it, and I'm not saying it's unimportant and that it has no place, I'm just comparing the two routes, and maybe they both need to be used. The one way is a long beard, a big black hat, and tzitzis sticking out wide and far. And my Torah comes with me in the streets. Says Rashi, but that's not what in Bechutoy Satei Lechu means. When it says walk with my statutes, it doesn't mean take my statutes, the tzitzis, and walk with them sticking out. That's not what it means. In Bechutoy Satei Lechu means Amelim Batorah, that your mind is occupied in working out Torah. That's what it means. Which means that the intellectual level on which learning is taking place has to be very sophisticated. Because you can't take a human being with a sophisticated intellect who's applying that sophistication in his work environment. And when he sits and reads something at home, he applies the sophistication, and he takes out an Encyclopedia Britannica and he analyzes it bi'iyun, and he applies his mind to it. And when he reads an article in a professional magazine or a journal, he applies his mind to it, and he has some comments to make about it, and he's able to talk intelligently about it. And then he goes to a shir and he has some reading and translation, and it's explained to him in some superficial sort of sense. That's not Amelim Batorah. That's not what it means to toil in Torah. What toiling in Torah means is that it's so mind-absorbing and mind-boggling that you can't switch off, that you can't turn it off. That b'chukosai teilechu, as you go, as you walk, as you eat, as you sleep, your mind is turning over all the time. You're so involved in it. That's what in b'chukosai teilechu means. And if it's ves mitzvosai tishmeru, if the function of that is in order to practice, there's a focus, there is a practical focus on it. There is an intention to make it part of me. Then vasisimusam, magically, you'll suddenly find that the standard of your observance is constantly rising. Without having to try it, without having to do it artificially, without having to force yourself, automatically you will find that you're more particular about the tzitzis you're wearing, that you, whether they're out or whether they're in, it doesn't make any difference. You're more meticulous. And about the lulav and esrog that you're using, whether anybody's watching or not, doesn't make a difference. And the tefillin that you're using, and the Shabbos that you're keeping, you're more meticulous, far more careful about it, without any special effort. It's just the natural consequence of being involved in that change process. And that means that it will express itself also in the way we interrelate with people, up to the fineness of the examples that we've had recently in the Rabbeinu Yonah that we've been learning every morning and afternoon. And that gives us an understanding in the Medrash that we learned last night. And let's have a look at it again. Why is it called a chayk? We've got to re-ask that question. Why use the term chok? In fact, now we understand the Medrash better. The Medrash asks, why use the word chok? Why use the word chok means statute? So we can ask the question on the Medrash, why not? Well, what's wrong with the word chok? And ask on every single word in the Torah, why use this word? Well, what's wrong with the word chok is, if we learn like Rashi's just said, that this does not mean keeping the mitzvahs. If it meant keeping the statutes, then chok is an appropriate word. But if it means amelim b'Torah, why doesn't it say amelim b'Torah? If it means toil in Torah, why doesn't it say im amelim tiyu b'Torah ves mitzvosai tishmeru? Finish, let it say simply. That's what the Medrash means with the question. Why is it called a chok? Omer Rabbi Levi b'shem Rabbi Chama b'Rabbi Chanina Omer chukim shebohem chakukim al yetzer hara. Because the Torah engraves itself, it chisels itself onto the Yetzer Hara. And that's what we discussed last night, that we tend to think that the Yetzer Hara is something negative, which it is, but it has some positive sides to it as well. And we think it's something that needs to be totally destroyed and denied, and we must pretend that it doesn't exist and lock it up in some cupboard, and that's it, forget about it. We should get on with the important things in life, like Torah and mitzvahs, and forget the Yetzer Hara. It doesn't work like that, says the Medrash. What is the Torah? The Torah chisels itself out on the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is the raw material for the personality. In fact, the Yetzer Hara is the personality. That Yetzer Hara, whatever you want to call it, the evil inclination, such a bad, awful translation. Let's translate Yetzer Hara being as an unprocessed human personality. That's what the Yetzer Hara is. And the Yetzer Hatov is a processed human personality, one which has been molded, one which has been chiseled, one which has been formed. But if you're going to take the Yetzer Hara and lock it away, if you're going to take the Yetzer Hara and destroy it, as I said last night, that's like Michelangelo saying when he comes into his studio and he sees all these raw rocks and he's got to start working, it's like him calling in his assistant and saying, one second, I make statues, I make beautiful works of art. What are these rocks doing here? Get rid of them. I don't make rocks. The rocks are your raw material. That's what you start with. And if we're going to become involved in the Torah process, and the first thing we're trying to try and do is get rid of the Yetzer Hara, because we work with Yetzer HaTov, you see, we're very religious. We only eat certain Rabbi Shechitas, and other Rabbi Shechitas we don't eat, because we're terribly religious. And we don't keep this Yetzer Hara business, we don't want to have anything to do with that. Get the rocks out of Michelangelo's studio. We make statues, not rocks. Different kind of thing. So interestingly enough, as somebody said to me at the Shabbos Shudas, Mr. Raff, I think it was. So how do you do it? How does Michelangelo make statues without rocks? There is a way to do it. What you do is you take somebody else's statues and you make a rubber mold out of it. You pour molten rubber over the statue and you make a rubber mold and you pour plaster of Paris into the mold and you can make a statue that looks just the same as Michelangelo's without even trying. You don't even have to be a sculptor. And that's what we tend to do in religious life as well. We look at other people, sometimes they're Gedolei Yisrael, sometimes they're great people, sometimes they're not great people. We make our rubber molds, we throw up. They're going to say, if you ask them what's the time, they'll say, Rav Shach says it's 10 o'clock. So you don't even have to question them, you don't even have to ask them, you just have to find out. There's no thought process taking place at all. There's no thinking, there's no originality whatever taking place. That's something, the originality, no matter who the human being is, rather an original one, who has formed himself, who's developed himself into himself. And how does he develop himself? Starting with that raw material. What is the raw material? That rock, that Yetzer Hara with which he starts. That's why it's called a choik. Choik means chiseling out. Says the Medrash, what this is, this Amelim Batoiru is a process of taking your personality and chiseling it out, not casting it out, not destroying it, but chiseling it out. And in fact, the Yetzer Hara is sometimes called in Chazal the Se'ir Sheba Iso. It's sometimes called the yeast in the dough. That's the Yetzer Hara, the yeast in the dough. And the Maharal points out that the yeast is not treif. The only thing about yeast is there's a certain time and a certain place where it's not allowed to play a part. There's a time, Pesach, 7 days of the year, not allowed to be there. There's a place in the Beis HaMikdash and certain korbonos, not allowed to be chometz. There are certain times and certain places where you can't have the Se'ir Sheba Iso. But if it was so bad, Hashem would have made a treif. It's not treif. It has a very important role to play. And so it is with the Yetzer Hara. It's not treif. That's why it's called the Se'ir Sheba Iso. It has an important role to play. But it's limited. There are certain times and places where it's not allowed. Its function has to be limited. It has to be kept in check. And in fact, it's very interesting that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in fact, points out that this same machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda that we've got in the Ramban, that Rabbi Yehuda says the wild animals will be totally destroyed and Rabbi Shimon says they will be neutralized, the same machlokes is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in Psochim as to when it says Tashbisu, that same word, you must destroy the Se'ir, you must destroy the yeast and the chometz. There's the same machlokes. Does that mean physically destroyed, or is it enough to be mevatel? Is it enough to say in your mind it's neutralized, it's hefker, it means nothing to me? And it's the same people. Rabbi Yehuda, who here says that Tashbisu means the wild animals will be destroyed, holds that by chometz as well, Tashbisu means you must destroy the chometz physically. And that's why we're Mekayim both. We fulfill both views. And we burn the chometz before Pesach. But that's not all we do. We do a bitul as well. That's for the view of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon means Tashbisu means you neutralize it. You don't have to physically destroy it. That's not what the word Tashbisu means. It means you neutralize it. And the halacha, that's the way we paskin. That the real biur chometz that we do, the real destruction of chometz is its neutralization through the bitul process, through the process of intellectual nullification, which we go through before we burn the chometz. And if we understand that the Yetzer Hara is the Se'ir Sheba Iso, we understand that this goes right through in Halacha. The Ramban says Rabbi Yehuda is the main view here. And in Psochim, Rabbi Yehuda is the main view as well. And in Musa, Rabbi Yehuda must be the main view too. That is, as far as the wild animals are concerned, Rabbi Yehuda says the wild animals are there, it's just that their wildness is neutralized. And in the Chometz, in the physical Chometz, Rabbi Yehuda says that it doesn't mean that you've got to burn the chometz and totally destroy it. It means you must neutralize it. It's not so negative that it must be destroyed. It just plays no part during Pesach. It must be neutralized. And so too we need to understand that the Yetzer Hara is part of the human personality. And Rabbi Yehuda will hold it is not there to be destroyed, but it is there to be neutralized. It is there to be limited. It is there to be contained and to be kept in its place and to be used only for the constructive purposes for which it was designed. The most important of all was the purpose of subjecting and submitting itself to the chisel of the sculptor. In Bechukosai Teilechu, if you will go, if you will walk and spend your life being occupied in the molding of your personality through the Amelus HaTorah, through applying your mind to the Torah with the intention of giving it physical expression through the way one lives, you will end up doing every part of the Torah much better, and intuitively and instinctively it will be part of your natural personality that you'll keep the Torah. Then the result of that will be all the wonderful brochas which are often mentioned, the Gishmeichem Be'itom, rain in its right time, the Nosno, Eretz Yisivulo, the land will give forth its produce, V'achaltem Lachmechem Lasoivo, you will eat bread and be satisfied. That's a bracha all on its own. V'ishavtem Lovetach Be'artzechem, and you will live in Eretz Yisrael, in your own land, Lovetach, with security, V'nosati Sholim Be'oretz, you live with peace, V'shechavtem Ve'en Macharid, when you go to sleep there will be nobody to wake you up trembling, V'ishbati Chayoro Min Ha'oretz, and I will destroy the effect of wild animals from the land and wild human beings. The Cherev Lo Yisaver Ba'atzechem, and not only will there be no war, but you will not be exposed to the harshness and to the reality even of implements of war. That's the level of total peace and tranquility that will come about when true change takes place within us all. The change of taking those rocks, taking that raw personality, subjecting it to the sculpture, to the chisel of the sculptor, to be Amelim Batiro, and that is the meaning of that formula given to us in the opening of the parsha, Imbuchu Kosai Teilechu.